For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Well, welcome. Good morning, Bodhisattvas, and welcome to Blake and Angela, who I think might be here for the first time, and Andy's pretty new. Some of us are just been hanging around here for almost 20 years. Yeah. It's great to see people here. On what I think is the 4th of July weekend. So, you know, some people celebrate 4th of July, some people ignore it, some people mourn it.
Some people set off lots of firecrackers.
And some people set off lots of firecrackers, says Eve. And the evenings have been full of sound. Some of it pretty harsh to my ears. Popping of fireworks or explosions. And there's even been, at least in the city, sort of a resurgence of this year's cicadas, kind of whirring, furiously screaming. I don't know if they're screaming for partners or to get out of those weird shells they're in, but it's left me feeling, I've been noticing a feeling in my body that is unsettled, and this feeling like the world is crying out, the entire earth is crying out in distress. So, as we may know, our practice with everything, with stress, distress, with joy, and love, is centered in our seated meditation, in a way. In a way, our lives, the more we practice Zazen, sit Zazen, live Zazen, are sort of centered around Zazen, flows from Zazen. And our Buddha way, just to be clear, isn't just facing a wall, but our Buddha way, our heart way, is the way of the Bodhisattva. And there are many ways to define Bodhisattva. But I'll say this. A Bodhisattva is a courageous, caring person, a human being, whose Zazen, which means their entire experience, is devoted to awakening for the benefit of all beings, all life. And let's say, technically speaking, in the Bodhisattva way, everything is life. You know, the wood in this little staff, teaching staff, the firecrackers going off. So it's always a question of how we're devoted to everything. And this is our great learning. Great learning. Zen bodhisattvas, Zazen bodhisattvas, are motivated to practice by great compassion. So that's sort of our power cell. And then the other motivation is this desire to relieve. So there's sort of, I think of relief of like, I don't know what relief is in Latin, comes from Latin. Do you, David Ray?
It means to lighten, to make it the load lighter.
Great, because I was thinking it's to like take the pressure off. So that doesn't mean throw away suffering, hate suffering, get rid of it. But it means relieving, taking that pressure off. lightning. So bodhisattvas are sometimes called enlightening beings, but they're lightning beings. Like lightning bugs, adding a little bit of brightness. And that includes one lightening the suffering of oneself and of others. And our study, and there are many, many training manuals, giant training manuals, but your body is a training manual of how to learn skillfully, wisely, and compassionately to respond to the difficulties internally and externally, the pain of war within and without, the pain of relationships with people, objects, sounds, sights, smells that we love and that we don't love. We learn this practice of how to do this skillfully. There's no report card. There's no policing of whether you did a good job or not. This is up to you to find out and discover and go, oh, what works? What doesn't in this lightening of suffering project? And in case you have not noticed, there's a lot of suffering around in need of some lightening, in need of our bodhisattva courageous responding, in need of clarity and compassion. So, July 4th, you know, had me thinking about how do we practice peace and caring in this world at this moment in time? I asked that question actually after Zazen recently, or before Zazen maybe, when I'm like, we were talking about recent news, I was talking with the Tantos, and I was like, what is our practice with all of this? And it wasn't rhetorical. It was like, what are we going to do in this world, at this moment, at this time, with what is the reality of a very precarious time in our land, in our country, where things are full of polarization and wound? This is distress. If you're not feeling that, especially when you're sitting, I would suggest that maybe we're overwhelmed sometimes and shut down. But to feel in Zazen and to open and to do that in a way that's kind to yourself as well as others is difficult. So I just want to remind people of a few things that I've been thinking about. So is this July 7th today? Yeah. Mm-hmm. On July 15th, right up the road in Milwaukee, is the Republican convention. And there will be someone chosen to represent that party in our election. On August 19th, right here in Chicago, we have the Democratic National Convention. Those are things happening. There'll be some more presidential and vice presidential debating. Probably more debacle. And then in November 5th, so like that's like 4 months away. I see Eve saying the Pledge of Allegiance or putting her hand over her heart, but in the Zendo. So, and this list I had puts November 5th, 2024, general election, and the location is everywhere. So after thinking about this timeline and the debates and recent legal decisions. I was thinking, I don't know what to do. What is the way? It's a famous old Zen question. What is the way? What guides my response in this dangerous situation? And I thought, I want to pray. Now, I didn't even know what that meant. It just arose in me. You know, help me, Buddha. I grew up Catholic, so maybe that's where this reflex is to pray, to call out for help, I think, is actually to realize my limitations of skill in responding to the situation. And then I remembered a bodhisattva prayer. That is a song of Zazen. It is a song of the bodhisattvas. It is a song for our great earth and inhabitants. And this prayer is a guided meditation of sorts. So feel free. I'm going to recite it. I had to look it up because I remembered. I'm like, oh, you know, there's a very famous prayer, you might say, or words of Buddha called the Metta Sutta, which is the loving kindness text. That's kind of a prayer and kind of a guided meditation. But there was another person who was roaming around Berkeley, California, I don't know, 30 years ago plus, who rewrote this as kind of a bodhisattva prayer called the Metta Prayer. So this is called the Metta Prayer by Maylee Scott. Maylee crafted this based on this much older Buddhist text, which was not quite the Bodhisattva school or the Zen school, an earlier school of Buddhism. So this is kind of updated by Maylee. So maybe you can close your eyes and connect with your bodies and hearts if you'd like, whatever works for you. But here we go. May I be well, loving, and peaceful. May all beings be well, loving, and peaceful. And this cardinal is encouraging us outside. May I be at ease in my body, feeling the ground beneath my seat and feet, letting my back be long and straight, enjoying breath as it falls, rises, falls, and rises. May I know and be intimate with body-mind. Whatever its feeling or mood, calm or agitated, tired or energetic, irritated or friendly. In and out, aware, moment by moment, of the risings and passings. So in this prayer already we have Zazen instruction. And Maylee's prayer goes on. May I be attentive and gentle towards my own discomfort and suffering. May I be attentive and grateful for my own joy and well-being. May I move towards others freely and with openness. May I receive others with sympathy and understanding. May I move towards the suffering of others with peaceful and attentive confidence. This is the Bodhisattva way, moving towards suffering of others with peace and attention and confidence. May I recall the Bodhisattva of compassion. Her thousand hands, her instant readiness for action, each hand with an eye in it, the instinctive knowing what to do. May I continually cultivate the ground of peace for myself and others, and persist mindful and dedicated to this work, independent of results. May I know that my peace and the world's peace are not separate, that our peace in the world is a result of our work for justice. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. So this is the prayer of Maylee Scott. And I noticed someone in the room as I was reciting also touching their heart. And I thought, that's great. I could have offered that too when we do these meditations, to bring our hands to our hearts. So I'll just say a little about Maylee. Maylee was a Zen priest and a renowned bodhisattva. I didn't know where she was living. In 2001, I remember my teacher, who was in Northern California, saying to me, Maylee has died. And telling me how she'd helped him at a tender time in his life and made a real positive difference in his life. And over the years, friends of mine, Dharma friends of mine from San Francisco Zen Center and Berkeley Zen Center, you know, you'd occasionally see them talking to each other about something and they'd nod in reverence. Ah, Maylee. So Maylee was an OG, an original engaged bodhisattva. She worked for peace and social justice, going to prisons and shelters and hospices for AIDS patients. And Maylee didn't turn away from the world. She stepped forward into the world of distress and stepped back into the practice of Zazen seamlessly, it seems. I think her loving kindness prayer is so encouraging and clear and beautiful. I think it is a great Buddhist teaching that goes right to the heart of Zazen. And somehow I feel like we instinctively knew this, some people putting their hands on their hearts. You know, sometimes when we encounter distress, we want to like put our hands to our heads and tear our hair out. But maybe we can put our hands to our hearts. Attending to ourselves and then moving towards the suffering of others with peaceful and attentive confidence. I think this confidence, this trust in Zazen, in one's true, authentic, loving heart, is the confidence of the Bodhisattva. You don't have to shy away from it and go, I don't want to be confident, that's too egotistical. You know, it takes a lot of courage just to come here and sit on a cushion in this weird room dressed in dark colors and settling ourselves. And this is part of that training program we can bring that kind of courage and confidence to meeting what's going on. You know, out of the window, there's a pride flag, and then across the street, a U.S. flag flowing in the wind, you know. So we meet all of these circumstances with courage and confidence and this attentive, peaceful confidence. And then we know what to do. Our Zazen hearts and bodies tell us and respond with instant readiness for action. Isn't that beautiful? Instant readiness. You know? And that means a willingness to step forward and take a little bit of a risk and then learn. Oh, was that okay? Let me check that out. And our Zazen, I think, gives us this ability to just pause for a second. And that second is an instant, but it's also a response. And then we know how to act. Her prayer advocates for, I think, a liberative or liberating effort that is based in the wisdom, the Dharma wisdom of non-separation, non-duality, and interconnectedness. That my peace is the world's peace, and that those are not separate. And she says something that I found a little provocative, that our peace in the world is a result of our work for justice. No, I didn't hear too much Buddha say too much about justice, but maybe we will. In our time, know what that means and realize it. It's a deep question. Maybe that's a koan for our time. What is justice, teacher? How do I practice it? How do I practice it and not other? So we have this practice of not othering, not separating. This is the antidote to the poison of duality, which has in it this delusory, delusionary loneliness of separation that fuels fear and hate. This is something we study. If you don't believe me, study it in Zazen and find how does fear arise, and how does hate arise? How do those things arise? Where are they from? Almost always from loneliness, a sense of separateness. So I'll say another little story about Mei Li. Mei Li also is sort of written about in The Hidden Lamp, which is stories from 25 centuries of awakened women. And this isn't written about Mei Li, but it's not written by Mei Li, but it's written about her interaction with the student. So this is Mei Li with the student. Crying in despair, an earnest student asked her teacher, Mei Li Scott, "I've worked so hard to transform this crippling loneliness. I can either shake it, and I cannot live with it. Can you help me?" Kind of like me praying. Mei Li held the student in a steady gaze, and offering a confident smile, Mei Li ended the conversation with, "Please don't ever think anything is out of place." So this is probably not the teaching this student was expecting, which said, embrace your loneliness. Don't try to get rid of it. Shake it off. And don't try to actually live with it, grab onto it, but hold it lightly in an embrace. Don't separate from it. Don't separate from this skin bag here and now. It says don't separate from your loneliness, from the world's injustice, from justice and taking that on, from confidence or courage or harsh sounds. So, a lot more could be said about Maylee, but here's was my response to contemplating her and her work, which may, you know, she wasn't a very famous Zen person. So maybe in time she'll be forgotten, like all of us, mostly. But she inspired me just to write a little response. So my response was, bodhisattvas ceaselessly attend to the well-being of the world, fearlessly walking the path blessed by vow, never leaving meditation, never othering, stepping back and stepping forward, nothing is out of place. So that was my response, and I'd really love to hear yours, bodhisattvas. Thank you very much for listening. And please, if anybody online in our wonderful cloud Zendo or in this Lincoln Square Zendo with a soft breeze and there was a cardinal chirping before, please bring forth any responses you have today. Ina-san.
Thank you for your talk. I really resonated with nothing is out of place. And it helps me because so many times I think everything is out of place. And I'm like, okay, no. We're just here, and this is how it looks and is. And so that's a very helpful thing to remember.
Thank you. Maybe when that doesn't mean, like, you know, sometimes on the altar things are not quite in alignment. So even though they're not out of place, we still take care of them. Asian Bodhisattva.
Thank you for a helpful way of thinking about this, really. Because, yeah, I'm a little, you know, discombobulated about what to think. But I appreciated the thought of embracing, you know, embracing what's happening, embracing maybe especially the people on the left and the right who are so upset that they can't even.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So you know, maybe finding a way to just embrace that suffering and what it is causing. I think I, you know, thought this in our presidential election 8 years ago and 4 years ago, you know, that the candidates, one in particular, are not independent actors, but symptoms of what's happening. And, so remembering that, because there's so little, well, I don't want to go down that road. we can influence the people that we come in contact with much more just by being open and accepting and embracing their suffering and ours. Mm-hmm. And our practice gives us lots and lots of experience with embracing our own suffering, so we can extend that to other people.
Sometimes it's hardest to embrace and give compassion to oneself. You know, this starts with, you know, and this prayer, this metta meditation starts with wishing oneself well, wellness, peace, and one's body and heart. And then once that happens, moves with this kind of attentive confidence and response outwards, which I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. But until I think we can settle with ourselves, it's going to be pretty hard to help anyone else. Mm-hmm. Eve?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, when I've done meditation, when I've used a, you know, version of that,
mm-hmm.
that prayer, yeah, I had noticed it was very hard to say, may I be content, mm-hmm. may I be happy. And so sometimes I've started, you know, with other people that was, I know you're supposed to go out to the people that you mm-hmm. don't like. And, but anyway, I've started with the other people. Sometimes the people that I, you know, can feel mm-hmm. compassion for more easily and then come back to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
That's also a traditional way to practice. This is Maile's, not mine. But this is Maile's. But I do think that, yeah, you know, you kind of start with sometimes with the easiest, who might be somebody you care about, and then move towards oneself or neutral. And there are many ways to practice with this. I will say one thing, too, about this prayer, and that is that if any of you have done what are called election retreats or sesshins where they were started, I think, in Berkeley, they recite this prayer during their sesshins where they're going out writing letters or registering people to vote as part of the practice that Alan Sinaki and others at Berkeley Zen Center do. So Maile's remembered in this way. But I thought it was interesting. This is recited prior to acting.
I just wanted to comment on that, because I do lead people in that in various contexts. And one of the things I always tell people when they get to the difficult person and they're sitting with it for a little bit is if they are feeling really uncomfortable, or agitated, then they might want to consider that they've chosen someone that's too difficult right now.
Mm-hmm.
That it's okay to have, it, you know, like I just went to a yoga class yesterday, mm-hmm. which I never do, and was, you know, amazed at what I couldn't reach that I used to be able to reach. But it's like we're stretching, you know, and this meditation is like a stretching, and you can't expect yourself to stretch beyond your capacity, but you can continue to increase your capacity to stretch. So, you know, maybe that's something that you just reminded me that maybe that's something that we can all think about with this practice as well, that there are some situations that are going to be too much.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We can take a step back and try it another day.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I went to yoga class yesterday, too, and the teacher said, she said, if you're stretching the point of pain, back off.
Mm-hmm.
That's too much.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, she said, don't just do the stretches that are easy for you. She said, if you're practicing at your edge, just, you know, like before the point of pain, that's where you're supposed to be in your body.
Yeah.
Tell you where to go.
This is really great, and you know, Aishin and Eve and everyone, that in Zazen, given our personal histories and also nonsense that's going on in the world, you know, can overwhelm. So you learn in your body where to soften and back off. And it's okay to back off. You know, sometimes it's like practice like your head is on fire, you know. And that's a little dangerous sometimes, because you think, oh, if I have any limitation, there's something wrong with me. And this is a multiple lifetime project, the Bodhisattva project. Whether your lifetime is each breath. But that really knowing how to back off and then move towards, step backwards and forwards, and not shame oneself for being human and being in the body you have at the moment. Each breath is arising. So thank you very much for pointing that out. I know that Kirsten's golden hand is in the corner. So please offer your Dharma.
Thank you, Roketsu, for such a lovely Dharma talk. And thank you for introducing me, certainly, to Meili. When you quoted Meili, when she said or wrote, or perhaps said to one of her students, please don't ever think anything is out of place. I felt as if that was both a portal and a response to the wonderful Dharma talk that you offered right after the week after the transition ceremony, which was about unsettled transition and what now? What now? And that reminded me, that rang for me or resounded for me once again when you reminded us that a very common ancient question for Bodhisattvas is, what is the way? And I remember at that one other Dharma talk, you offered out and asked people, what do you think is, what is your what now? How do you take that right now? And I had a response, but I wanted to hear what other people were saying. But I remember at the time, I thought, well, I've taken up rock climbing with my son, but I've realized that the thing I like the most is hanging from the boulders. I'm inside. And I hang from the boulders and I drop to the floor, the really nice cushion mats. And I love the stretch that it offers the body. You're just hanging from your arms. And to me, that is the embodiment often of what now. It's where I feel it the most, because the thing is, at that point, there is a way. You're going to drop. You can't actually put yourself back on depending upon the boulder. So you know you're going to drop. So for a moment, you just stretch and you feel this before you drop. And that came up to me again, not only, hopefully not because I wanted to respond to your Dharma talk from weeks ago, but because when you brought up the cicada and you said, what are they doing? And they're doing what they do. That they're doing their part of the way. And so when the pain and the disruption, the dissatisfaction and the violent difference that we feel amongst one another right now, I suspect, and perhaps I hope, that what now has a way. There is a way to be attentive to one another in great compassion. And I feel as if your talk brought that out in a remarkable way. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kirsten. At least I don't even remember my own Dharma talk. So like, what do you remember? I'm like, what did I? I don't remember. But so, thank you for remembering and sharing your practice and response. And yeah, we're all dropping eventually. So, and the stretch is, it's just that moment. Okay, well, bodhisattvas, we have work to do after zazen. We need to clean the zendo up, and then we'll have tea, and we're going to do the bodhisattva vows and announcements, and I'll sign off in a second, but the room will stay here, and I want to thank everyone for coming to meet together, to practice together, to find the way together, and extend your stretch open, your bodhisattva hearts. So thank you all very much.
Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. The Buddha's ways unsurpassable. We bow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Buddhas are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We bow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We bow to realize it.